Corellian Exclusion Zone aboard the Love Commander.
I feel, Lando announced, like an idiot. He studied himself in the main display screen serving the captain's chair on the Love Commander control cabin. Mounted on a swing-out arm so that it could be positioned directly before him or moved out of the way, it was now beside his chair and switched off. Reflective when not active, it showed him in his new guise, wearing a white beard and mustache and a white wig with hair so long that the braids swinging from it would reach to his thighs when he stood. "But you look magnificent," Leia said.
"Oh, I know that. Not even the wig could downgrade me to just startlingly handsome."
Shrugging, Lando swung the display screen completely out of the way. He affixed Han with a stern stare.
"Navigator, a-heading."
Han returned his glare. He'd had to go to a greater extreme to disguise himself. Without a beard, he looked like Han Solo. With one, he looked like his cousin, Thrakensal Solo, the late Corellian president. Some more significant efforts were called for. He'd sprayed all exposed areas of skin with a cosmetics compound that turned him a yellowish hue, and the spiky black halves of his false mustache, had they continued up to his nose, would have made a perfect chevron.
"Same as it was 5 minutes ago, Captain," he said. "Straight toward Corellia, straight from Coruscant, along the most heavily patrolled corridor throughout the exclusion zone."
"Good, good." Lando nodded benignly. "I'm glad you haven't managed to foul up in 5 minutes." Han flexed his shoulder experimentally.
"When I'm better, I'm gonna throttle you."
Leia smiled and turned back to her control board. She was the least dramatic looking of the three. Dressed in a dumpy brown jumpsuit padded here and there to make her less visually interesting to male observers, wearing makeup that diminished her beauty rather than enhancing it, her hair in a nondescript style and tucked up into her cap. She was unexceptional in every way. Then, as her attention fell on the sensor screen, her eyes brightened. "We have an incoming blip. No telemetry yet, except that it's bigger than a starfighter, smaller than a capital ship." She patched the comm board through the overhead speakers.
"Incoming craft, this is Spinnerfish, Galactic Alliance Second Fleet. Cut your sublight engines and identify yourself immediately."
At Lando's nod, Leia killed the ion thrusters. Lando swung out his display screen again and activated it. Before him was the image of a young man, crisply attired in an Alliance Fleet Lieutenant's uniform. He was clean-shaven, his face angular, his manner stern, official. Behind him were cockpit chairs arranged in a configuration Lando recognized.
"Armed shuttle," he told himself. "Don't we rate at least a Corvette?"
But he put on his friendliest smile and modulated his voice into its richest tones.
"Hello, I'm Biscott Off Derman, master of the private yacht Love Commander. What's a spinnerfish?"
The lieutenant opened his mouth as if to answer, looked confused for just a fraction of a second, and thought better about responding.
"Love Commander, you are entering restricted space. You have to turn around and depart the Corellian system."
"Oh no, son, I'm here for at least a month. I'm here to gamble."
"Gamble, sir? What is your planet of origin?"
"That would be Coruscant."
"Then you have to be aware that the Galactic Alliance and the Corellian system are currently in a state of war."
"You don't say. What has that got to do with gambling?"
"It means you can't visit."
"Son, I don't see that gambling has anything to do with anything. My gambling in Corellia won't alter the course of the war 1 millimeter. I mean, it's not as though I had a bunch of smuggling compartments filled with Bacta or offers of aid from Commodore, is it?"
The lieutenant's mouth worked for a moment. Then he said,
"Love Commander, prepare to be boarded and inspected."
Lando smiled agreeably.
"Now that's the kind of thing I like to hear. Decisiveness. Crew, activate the top airlock and prepare to be boarded."
The lieutenant and two security officers came aboard. Han took the security men on a tour of the yacht, while the lieutenant came to the control cabin, his datapad in hand and questions on his mind. He sat in the navigator's seat while Leia pretended to ignore him.
"Captain Off Derman, do you know what the penalties are for offering aid and comfort to the enemy in a time of war?"
"I imagine they're pretty harsh," Lando said. "Good thing we're not doing that."
"Good thing we're not doing that. Leia quietly echoed, making a small gesture with two outstretched fingers.
So it's a good thing you're not doing that,
the lieutenant said. He checked an item off on his datapad.
No, Lando continued. What we're actually doing is something else. Something vital to the Alliance's war effort.
Vital, Leia said. The lieutenant nodded, earnest, interested.
Vital?
So we have to get to Corellia.
So we have to get to Corellia.
Well, you obviously have to get to Corellia, then.
Lando shrugged.
But how?
The lieutenant thought about it.
Well, it's a pity you don't have any of the access codes provided by intelligence that would allow you to fly right in.
Oh, that would be handy.
Lando fixed the lieutenant with what he hoped was an honest look.
Do you have a lot of those recorded on your shuttle, son?
The lieutenant laughed.
I can't tell you, sir.
Of course you can, Leia said.
Of course I do.
Why don't you just give us one, then?
Why don't you just give us one, then? The lieutenant nodded.
That would solve everyone's problem, wouldn't it?
Lando smiled.
It sure would.
The lieutenant rose.
I can't just transmit that sort of information. I'll go download it from our bridge computer and give you a data chip. How does that sound?
Sounds wonderful.
Star system MZX-32905 near Bamil.
Today it was to be makeup. Good old-fashioned powders and pigments and pseudo-skin appliances. Lumaya sat before a brightly lit mirror and got to work. It was painful, of course. Not long ago, Luke Skywalker had shot her 5 times with a blaster. 2 of those shots had hit prosthetic limbs, with simulated pain that could be switched off instantly, and damage that could be repaired within minutes. But 3 of those shots had found meat. And despite the fact that she healed at an unnaturally high rate, both from force-based healing trances and from the alterations made to her body decades earlier by the science of Emperor Palpatine, she was far from recovered. She hurt. And that was why it was to be makeup today. When trying merely to hide her scarred features, she normally wore an identity-concealing scarf wrapped around her lower face. She could bring up the force illusion of normal features if obliged to reveal herself. But distracted as she now was by injuries, her control might slip, allowing viewers a glimpse of the real features beneath. Properly applied pseudoskin didn't slip. When she was done, she appeared to be a woman of 30, roughly half her true age, and to possess the beauty and many of the racial stock characteristics of a woman of the Hapes Consortium. She drew on the force to dull her pain while she rose and dressed in a green gown and matching neck scarf, both overlaid with a webwork of gold thread and altogether too much sapphire jewelry, all appropriate to a wealthy Hapen woman. Dressed, she looked at herself in the mirror again, ensuring that the makeup had endured. Ready and confident, she gave herself a nod and then marched into the next room. It was a hemispherical holocom chamber. The central area, essentially a studio-quality stage, was surrounded by a ring of holocams that together would sample a 3-dimensional image. Lumaya's servant droids had set up the central area with a chair that plausibly looked like a marble throne. Lumaya knew it to be foam plas covered in a beautiful mottled green and white veneer and a matching side table. On the table was a bowl of peeled, oversized grapes. She sat carefully on the throne and sampled one of the grapes. It was gummy, nasty, not a true grape at all, but a candy-like material produced by an ancient food fabricator that had been new when this station was built. The chrono above the main comm board counted down the last few seconds remaining to her. As it neared zero, she said, "Contact 339. Lights above the holocams flared up, bathing her in brightness, and the holocom unit activated with a surge of noise resembling the engine startup sound of a well-tuned high-performance speeder. The disembodied voice of the system computer, male and pleasant, said,
"Contact."
A moment later it added,
"The target system is acknowledging. They are receiving."
The computer's voice would be electronically scrubbed from the audio signal being sent. No return hologram appeared before Lumaya. The target was receiving, but not yet responding. After nearly 30 seconds, a hologram materialized before her. the image of a Bothan male. His fur mostly black with patches of tan, including one patch surrounding his eyes, that gave him the appearance of a mask wearer being broadcast in negative.
Who are you? How did you get this frequency and access code?
Lumaya finished her grape before turning her attention to the hologram.
I am a humble daughter of a noble house, and I obtain these things by paying a fortune to the correct people. And you are T'Thak Roylan, Deputy Intelligence Leader for the esteemed world of Barthui.
So, you have my attention, briefly.
Lumaya smiled.
I will say things. You do not have to confirm or deny them. Then I will give you my frequency and access code. After this message ends, I suspect you will speak with your superiors and then, eventually, initiate a return communication.
Go ahead.
Karoylan was professionally civil.
The Barthans are preparing 3 fleets for an assault on Galactic Alliance forces,
Lumaya said.
A just response to what you have suffered at their hands, including a series of assassinations of key Bothan personnel on Coruscant. But your planners are impeded because it will be impossible to launch the fleets from the Bothui system and the other origin points without being detected, and probably shadowed by Galactic Alliance forces. This eliminates your ability to perform surprise attacks.
The Bothan shrugged, looking at her as though he hadn't recognized a single term she'd used.
So, she continued, I am communicating to inform you that I can blind the GA observers and give you the opportunity of, 10 to 20 standard hours in which to deploy your forces without being detected. Of course, to do this, I would have to have information sources planted deep within the GA government. And I do. I shall prove this by providing you with some information. Free, useful information.
She modulated her voice, making it lower, more sultry.
Favio, transmit the package.
The computer's voice responded.
At once, mistress.
The files now coming on your displays,
Lumaya continued,
are from the internal records of the Galactic Alliance Guard. They include details on the assassinations I mentioned a moment ago. By details, I mean details that the Holonews services never had. Exact times, places, and methods of assassination. Personal items the victims were carrying. What the victims were doing before they were killed, including recordings of their conversations and transmissions. Things that only the killers and their superiors could possess.
The fur rippled on Karoylan's snout, just for a moment. It could have been nothing more than an itch. Lumaya admired his self-control. As cold-blooded as Bothans could be about such matters, Karoylan could well have lost friends to this spree of assassination. And probably had.
Irrespective of your earlier statements about imagined Bothan military activity, if these files turn out to be accurate, you will earn our thanks. They will be most useful when we prosecute the killer or killers.
You are welcome.
Lumaya gave him a nod, pure Haban condescension.
Now I will go about other duties. The last file transmitted has information on how and when to reach me, should you need to.
The Bothan opened his mouth to reply, but his hologram suddenly disappeared. Lumaya's computer, primed to end the transmission when she made a specific statement, had done so.
Elmas Private Spaceport, Coronet Corellia, Lounge of the Love Commander.
The insertion onto Corellia had not been as difficult a task as Leia and the others had feared. They'd maintained a high orbit near a cluster of Alliance vessels, nervously waiting for their intelligence authorization to be revealed as a fake, until they had detected a small task force forming up. It consisted of a sensor-heavy shuttle, several starfighters, and a couple of bombers, obviously intended to make one or more reconnaissance passes over the planet's surface. Playing on their intelligence authorization, Han had calmed in, requesting permission to accompany the task force down into the atmosphere.
Sure, had come the mission commander's reply. But if you get blown up, you can't expect us to come back and pick up the pieces.
So they had flown down at the tail end of the task force, had waited until a squadron of Corellian TIE fighters had fallen on the force, and had broken away,
using terrain following flying, as terrifying with Leia at the controls as it would have been with Han doing the honors, until they were well clear of the engagement zone and pursuit. Now, hours later, they waited in a hangar that cost a fortune to rent, but came with the scant protection offered by one smuggler when renting to another. Han's old contacts continued to pay off, so long as Lando was willing to pay out. They waited for nightfall and the covering darkness it would bring, as slight as that might be in the heart of the city, and reviewed recent news broadcasts. One that was often cycled showed Wedge Antilles at his retirement announcement.
"He'd never retire at a time like this," Leia said, "so he's being forced out."
Lando smoothed his false beard.
"But is he being forced out because he didn't approve of the attack on Tenel Ka, or because it was his plan and it failed?"
Han snorted.
"He put his career on the line to retake Trollis with a minimum of casualties. That old mess at Hapes couldn't have been his plan. Didn't work the way he thinks."
"But he'll know who was responsible," Lando said. "I think we should ask him."
Han and Leia exchanged a glance.
"It may not be as easy as that," Leia said. "We've already tried to reach him by comlink. All we got was a recorded message saying that he and his family were celebrating his retirement by going on vacation. Not where, not for how long. No information on how to reach him."
"Who would know?"
"Their best friends are on the other side," Leia said. "Tycho and Winter Selchu."
Han frowned.
"He's leaving Corellia."
Leia and Lando both looked at him. Lando looked confused, as if Han had been using stepping stones to cross a stream, and Lando couldn't spot the stones to follow him.
"How do you figure that?" Lando asked. "His home is here."
Han irritably waved the notion away.
"His home is the military. For him, Corellia is just a good place to retire. He didn't even grow up on planet. He grew up on a refueling station that doesn't exist anymore. No, he's got to get off world. He's in disgrace with his former bosses. Bosses who assassinate. And he's not going to leave his family vulnerable to them."
He considered for a moment.
"He'll be in hiding now. What we'd have to do is figure out how he's going to get off world, assuming he hasn't already, and meet up with him. And that would be a lot of work. Denjak's Tepler may have no power, but he's been friendly before and may know something. Let's see if we can get to him."
Coronet Corellia.
In the quietest hours of the morning, the three of them huddled around a small table in the most private sort of cantina. The table Han, Leia, and Lando sat at was toward the back of the main room, where the 1,000 colorful rays of light from above the bar decorations and along the wall glow rods fell only dimly. They had a good angle on the door and looked up every time someone entered the cantina. And this time, they didn't instantly dismiss the new customer as a prospect. The glow rods above the door showed him to be wrapped in a cloak, its hood casting his face into deep shadow. He stood there as the door swung shut behind him and scanned the bar's interior. Not sure whether this was Tepler's intermediary, Han straightened, made a look-at-me motion, and caught the new customer's attention. The man walked over and, without invitation, sat on the table's fourth chair. He didn't lower his hood, but at this distance, Han recognized Denjak's Tepler. Han cocked an eyebrow at him.
"Isn't it risky for you to travel alone? I thought for sure you'd send a Rodian with a scar and a limp to escort us to a secret hideaway."
Tepler snorted.
"All my hideaways are being monitored, as I am. But a while back I hired a lookalike. My surveillance follows him home, meaning I can sometimes walk around freely."
"With no bodyguards," Leia said.
Tepler nodded.
"Yeah."
He looked up as a waiter droid, a cylinder on wheels with 8 arms rolled up.
"Whiskey and water," he said, making his voice hoarse. "Pre-war."
The droid rolled away, and Tepler returned his attention to the others, particularly Lando.
"I don't know you."
Lando extended his hand.
"Lando Calrissian."
Tepler shook it.
"Nice to meet you. Though I think you picked a bad time to come out of retirement."
"Just as you picked a bad time to go into politics."
"True."
Tepler turned back to Han and Leia.
"So, why am I here?"
"The attack on Queen Mother Tenel Ka," Leia said.
"Ah."
"First," Han said, Did you have anything to do with it?
Tepler shook his head.
Or know anything about it?
Not until it was underway. Durgedjian was the chief planner for and signed off on the mission to kill the Queen Mother Tenel Ka.
Leia nodded. And it was an assassination mission, not a kidnapping attempt?
If they grabbed her, they would have killed her.
Leia pressed on.
Wedge Antilles?
He didn't know about it. He was ordered to step down because he didn't support waging a war that dirty.
Leia felt a little trickle of alarm, but it seemed remote, not directed at her. Closing her eyes, she extended her awareness through the Force to areas beyond her immediate surroundings, through the ceiling and floors, walls on all sides. Outside the front door and wall, she found outrage. Someone wanting to come in, but being prevented. More than one someone. A gradual massing of bodies. She opened her eyes. The waiter droid was just rolling up. She asked the droid, "What's immediately beneath us?"
"That would be the storage and distillery rooms, my lady. We no longer do tours of our micro-distillery, but the floor is available for rent for private parties, holodrama recordings."
"Quiet," Leia said. "Han, Lando, door."
Elmas Private Spaceport, Coronet Corellia, Rental Bay 601208.
"Dad, something's happening outside."
Instantly awake, still dressed in a jumpsuit, not much improved by having been worked in for a day, Wedge rolled out of his cot and joined his daughter, Miri, at the hangar's side viewport. The viewport was mostly covered in black sheeting, in which Miri and his wife, Ayella, had cut strategic holes for viewing. The interior of the hangar was in darkness, so it took his eyes no time to adjust. Across the accessway between rows of rental hangars, three people were making a hurried approach. They stopped well short of Wedge's hangar and clustered around a personnel door two hangars down.
"Not our problem," Wedge said, rubbing his eyes.
He'd gotten to sleep only an hour or two earlier, after a long session of performing vehicle repairs and maintenance. Miri had been right to awaken him, but he was anxious to get back to sleep.
"I think it is."
The voice was Corin Horn's, from just behind Wedge, and Wedge started. He turned to offer Corin a mock glare.
"Ex-Corsec and Jedi. Makes you twice as sneaky. What makes you think it's a problem? You can't even see out there."
"But I can feel."
Corin gestured toward the distant arrivals.
"One of them is Leia Solo."
Wedge whipped around and put his eye to the peephole again. The three people had disappeared, presumably having gone through the door.
"You're sure?"
"I'm sure."
"What's all the noise?"
Stumbling down the boarding ramp of the Pulsar Skate, her Baudu-class yacht, covering a yawn and half-smothering her words with one hand, was Mirax Horn, Corin's wife, and Miri's namesake. Wedge had known her for decades. She was the daughter of Booster Tarek, Wedge's mentor in the smuggling trade back in the days before Wedge joined the Rebel Alliance. Round-faced, with black hair cut in a short, practical style, she retained much of the fresh-faced, blue-eyed beauty that had characterized her when she and Wedge were both teenagers.
"Leia's two doors down with two strange men," Wedge said.
"How do you know they're two strange men?" Mirax asked. "It might be Han and Luke."
"Han and Luke are two strange men."
Wedge looked around the people assembled before him. Only Ayella was still horizontal, on her cot beneath the S-foil of Wedge's X-Wing. She had pulled her pillow over her head to muffle all the conversational noise.
"In a couple of minutes, when they've had time to relax, we'll send someone over."
"Me?" Miri said. "I'm the only one whose face isn't all over Corsecs or Assassin's shoot on sight guides."
Corin gave her a melancholy little smile.
"It's not going to happen, girl."
"Uncle Corin, if you're going to give me the same old you're too young argument..."
Corin cut her off with a gesture and a shake of his head.
"Listen."
Everyone did. They could all hear the rush of thrusters and repulsor lifts. Wedge found it curious that he couldn't identify the speeder from its engine noise. Then he realized why. He wasn't listening to one speeder close by, but to several farther away, their engine and thruster noises blending together and echoing off hangar walls. And the noise was getting louder, closer.
"Ayella," Wedge called. "Everyone, set up for immediate evacuation."
Corellia, control cabin of the Love Commander.
Power coming online in 2 minutes, Leia announced.
Lando tried to keep his dissatisfaction from his face.
I hate transports with slow startup times, he grumbled. If that idiot had had any sense, he'd have installed a 10-second starter. If he'd had any sense, he wouldn't have lost his yacht to you, Han said. Relax, we have plenty of time.
Through the front viewports, they could all see the line of sparks appear at the hangar door as a laser cutting tool outside sheared through the locking mechanism. The door rolled open, and half a dozen Corsec agents charged in. Just outside, making the final turn to aim at the Love Commander, was an old, though doubtless still deadly, TIE crawler. The ball-shaped cockpit, familiar from TIE fighters, was mounted between two low, rectangular sets of tank treads, and Lando could see the machine's twin blaster cannon barrels trained squarely on Love Commander's control cabin. A Corsec officer with an oversized comlink held up before his face entered with his men. His words came across Love Commander's comm board, and magnified could even be heard through the yacht's hull.
This is Corellian Security. Power down and exit your craft immediately for identification.
Leia, stall them, Lando ordered. We can get our shields online in just over a minute.
Leia shook her head. No, they're serious. They'll open fire before then. We can surrender now and escape while we're being transported.
Han's lip had twitched when the word surrender was uttered, and now he shook his head.
Princess, we...
There was an engine roar from outside. All the Corsec agents still outside looked to their right. Some of them ran, into the hangar and toward Love Commander, or out of sight of the access way. Anywhere that wasn't toward the TIE crawler. A flash of red light hit the crawler's starboard treads. Low, almost at the level of the permacrete. The shot flipped the crawler, and it rolled, coming down resting on one of its treads. A starfighter flashed by outside.
That was an X-Wing, wasn't it? Lando asked.
Leia nodded.
Wedge?
Han shook his head.
Emerald green with a checkerboard pattern.
Leia smiled.
Corrin!
Then an X-Wing in standard gray with red piping flashed by.
Power? Lando asked.
Leia checked her status board.
Coming online in 3, 2, 1, now!
Shields up! Lando ordered. Get us out of here!
Coruscant, Jedi Temple.
Ben's opponent wasn't particularly impressive. The droid had a scrawny body, its four spindly legs just sturdy enough to allow it to walk around. Its two arms ended not in hands, but in tubes about 8 centimeters in diameter. And its head was huge, the size of an entire R2 unit, with two green glowing optical sensors where eyes would be, and a set of speaker vents in the position of a human mouth. In the mirror that ran the full length of the chamber on one wall, they seemed unlikely combatants. A droid with a ludicrously large head and a friendly-looking teenage boy with bright red hair in a Buzz-style haircut.
Last series. Ready.
To better test himself, Ben left his lightsaber off for the moment and turned his back on the droid.
Ready.
There was a plonk noise as the first foam steel ball left one of the droid's arm tubes. And that, Ben felt, as a displacement of air, as a little tickle of worry. He could sense the direction of the ball's travel straight toward the back of his head. He swung around, sidestepping the ball's path, igniting the lightsaber as second, third, and fourth balls shot out toward him. He swung at the first one, but his blade was only half extended, and his strike was half a meter short of its target. The second ball shot harmlessly past him, but he connected with the third and fourth, sending them ricocheting away from him. Their glossy exteriors took the momentary contact with a coherent light blade without melting or deforming. Then more balls came pouring from the droid's arms. Ponk, 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 ponk. The droid varied its aim, firing at Ben's feet, chest, head, arms, aiming at positions bracketing Ben in case his dodging moved him into their path. He didn't deflect all of them. One cracked painfully into his left knee. Another grazed his cheek. But his success ratio was pretty high. He could feel the balls moving around behind him along the gleaming Apakia hardwood floor. They separated into two streams, circling around him back toward the droid, controlled by the magnetic impulses it was sending.
As Ben watched and deflected two more balls, the first ones that had been sent against him reached the base of the droid, flew up to hover above the droid's head, and dropped into the slot there. Back in the hopper, they could be fired at him again. On impulse, Ben chose one of the balls now approaching the droid and reached out to it through the Force. He stomped with his foot, physicalizing the way he wanted to direct his attack, and lashed out with Force energy. The ball flattened, becoming a disc wider than but about half as tall as it had been before. It still flew up to hover above the droid's head, and when it dropped toward the slot, Ben gave it some extra energy. It hit the slot and half-folded, jamming into place. Swatting away at the next four balls, Ben watched as half a dozen more dropped onto the droid's head, bounced off the ruined ball, fell to the floor, and rolled around to get to the backs of the two lines of balls awaiting retrieval. No more balls emerged from the droid. Ben waited, watching as expended balls from the two lines flew up over the droid, bounced off, fell to the ground, and got back in line again. Then that action, too, ceased. Released from magnetic control, most of the balls now stayed where they lay. A few rolled a hand span in one direction or another before coming to a stop. Ben felt the tiniest of tugs against his lightsaber. He gripped it hard just before it tried to yank itself out of his hand. It struggled with him, attempting to fly to the droid, but he got his left hand on it as well and held firm. He deactivated it and grinned at the practice droid. Finally, the lightsaber too stopped trying to move on its own. The droid said,
"Have you sabotaged me?"
"Yes," Ben said, "in the spirit of defeating an enemy."
"I shall file your actions under tactics, then. I designate this exercise complete. Last series success ratio 94%. Last series ended at 22% of balls expended due to tactical sabotage. Learner weapon retention successful."
The droid rolled toward the door out of the training hall, and the balls now returning to the straight line formations rolled out after it. Leaving, the droid passed another Jedi learner waiting beside the door. She must have entered while Ben was in the midst of the last exercise, and he recognized with a little flash of embarrassment that he hadn't detected her. He had been too focused on his task. She was several centimeters taller than he was, 3 or 4 years older, and redheaded, her long hair a shade more coppery than his mother's. She came forward as the balls continued to roll out of the hall.
"Hello."
"Hello." Ben returned his lightsaber to his belt hook. She extended a hand.
"I'm Saha. Saha Dorvald."
"I know." He took her hand to shake it. There was something in her hand. Something small and rectangular. A card of some sort. But her expression didn't change. She didn't acknowledge that she just handed him anything. A little thrill shot through Ben. He knew why. First, she was really good-looking. And she was talking to him. Second, she'd just done something covert. He wondered what was on the card. Instructions to meet her somewhere? A communication from the government of Corellia, begging his help to resolve the military crisis? An offer of a bribe? He'd just been kicked out of a practice session straight into a holodrama, and he keenly felt the transition. On the walk back to his quarters, Ben thought about what to do. He stopped in at a playroom set aside for Rontos, students 3 to 5 years younger than Ben. There were no children or adults present, but there were games and toys scattered here and there among the cushiony chairs and other brightly colored items of furniture. As he knew there must be, there were data pads, most of them with larger controls suited to smaller, clumsier fingers, and one of them had a privacy headset. He took it. He stepped into a closet used to hold cleaning supplies. Standing in the narrow gap between shelves holding pungent-smelling bottles and plasteel containers, he opened the data pad and quickly stripped out its communications chip. He felt nervous doing this anywhere in the temple, but didn't think that, even if he was under near-constant observation, they could have put holocams everywhere. Not in a cleaning supply closet, surely not. Later, in his quarters, he moved his chair so that he could sit with his back to a corner. He made a slightly exaggerated show of selecting a game card from his small collection of entertainments. He was sitting down, he palmed the game card and inserted Saha's instead. Then he donned the headset and accessed the card. The Galactic Alliance Guard logo came up with a brief message. "Special Agent Ben Skywalker, enter access code." Ben typed in the password he used in the GAG offices to access messages and orders.
The message changed to ask sound mode for secure surroundings or text mode for public areas. He chose sound. The screen flickered and Jason's image came up.
Ben,
Jason said, his voice a little thin over the headset speakers.
This is important. Memorize the information on this card. Replay it if necessary. Once you're sure you have it memorized, destroy the chip. Don't just break it, destroy it irretrievably.
He paused as if to give Ben time to absorb the gravity of his words. Ben felt that thrill again. This is real. This is important.
I need to send you on a mission. You specifically, because it has to be someone with the GAG interests, my interests at heart. Someone who is force-sensitive, and someone who has proven that he can operate alone. That's you or me, and I can't leave my duties at this time. I'm sorry about interrupting your training, and sorrier still that this may cause friction between you and your parents, but I'll make them understand this was all my doing. Here's the essential core of the mission. Remember it, so that if anything goes wrong with the operational details I give you, you'll remember what's most important. You are to acquire the Amulet of Kalara, and secretly bring it to me.
The image switched to a standard planetary data screen, with the name Almania at the top. Jason's voice continued.
The amulet is on the planet of Almania, in the planetary offices of Tendrando Arms. It resides in a display case on the 215th floor of their office building. Security in the building is nothing special, since it's shared by hundreds of different firms, and security on the display case is also poor, because the owner doesn't know what he possesses.
The image changed to a close-up view of a jewel hanging from a silver chain. The jewel was a gray oval, its surface knobby and textured rather than smooth. In the center of the face was a vertical bar of some ruby-like gem, flanked by a lustrous black semi-precious stone. The effect was rather like looking at a silvery feline eye with a red slitted pupil.
This is the Amulet of Kalara. Now, the important thing. Ben, if this gets into the hands of a force-sensitive who knows the secrets of its activation, we're all in trouble. Because while such a person has it activated, he will be invisible in the Force. Even his use of the Force is invisible to other Force users. Think about what that means. He'll be like one of the Yuuzhan Vong warriors, but can be a normal person. Human, Rodian, Bith, whatever. He would be a tremendous danger to your parents, the Order, me, everyone, and everything. If you find the amulet in its display case, wonderful. We're going to give you a replacement to leave for the real thing. Mission accomplished. But if anyone gets his hands on it...
The image switched back to Jason, and he was even more grave than before.
You have to assume that he knows its secret. That he's a powerful dark Jedi or other force sensitive, and that he can activate it at any moment. Ben, you have to eliminate him before he eliminates you. I'm sorry, but it's true.
A weight settled in Ben's stomach. What Jason was suggesting sounded like, under the right circumstances, it could be murder. But if the amulet was what Jason said, it had to be put in the right hands. Had to be.
So, at any point in the next 2 nights, you need to visit the temple's fourth level exercise changing room. Open the leftmost locker, combination 686, and retrieve the packet of clothes and other items there.
Kuat System, aboard the Love Commander.
Establish communications, Lando said.
I really think, Leia said, you're letting this whole captain thing go to your head.
Lando gave her a long, thoughtful look. You're right, dearest Leia, friend of decades, noble Jedi Knight. Please, do me one more favor for this old, old man before his vital spirit leaves his faltering body.
She gave him a long-suffering look. Forget I said anything. Ready to broadcast.
No, no, not that. I meant come live with me. Tendra would understand, I'm sure of it. She sighed.
Yes, Han, you can shoot him.
Wouldn't think of it, her husband said. If I shot him now, I'd never learn just how deep into trouble he could talk himself.
Ready to broadcast now,
Leia said, and pressed the switch on the comm board.
This is Beskad Off Derman, Master of the Love, Commander, Lando said. Approaching the Errant Venture. Do you read me, Venture? Over.
Errant Venture Flight Coordination here, Love Commander. We read you.
On Lando's display, the distant view of the Errant Venture, the galaxy's sole star destroyer to bear a lurid red paint job, faded and was replaced by the face of a young red Twi'lek woman.
We have a reservation and landing authorization. Love, Commander, and the all-clown squadron of fun.
The woman glanced down, presumably at a data screen.
So you do. You're cleared for landing.
Her voice trailed off, and she looked again, obviously not prepared for what she'd seen.
In the flag hangar, I'm sending a guidance beacon on your frequency now.
Corellian Exclusion Zone, aboard the Anakin Solo, Command Salon.
In the holocom transmission, Luke looked as serene as usual, but still Jason could sense that the Grand Master was impatient, distressed. Mara, beside him, didn't bother to hide it. Her expression was a mix of worry and anger. Without preamble, Luke said,
Jason, where's Ben?
Jason gave him a confused look. I take it from the question that he's not where he's supposed to be. Luke nodded.
That's correct. I noticed that you didn't answer my question directly.
Jason felt a flash of anger. How dare Luke assume he was hiding something? The fact that he was did not enter into things. Luke needed to treat him with more respect. It was a lesson he had to make sure Luke learned. That would be soon, he hoped. Do you see conversational ploys in every discussion, Luke? The way he spoke the Grand Master's familiar name was just short of insulting. All right, then. Let me be absolutely clear. I don't know where Ben is. That was the truth. Lumaya was monitoring Ben's mission, not Jason. Luke was silent for long moments. Finally, he said,
I'm sorry, but we're worried. He disappeared from the temple and we can't find any sign of where he's gone.
Can you feel him in the Force?
Yes, but that doesn't mean he's safe. Just that he's alive. Somewhere. And not close.
Jason sighed. He's too old to be running away from home like this. My guess is he resents the fact that you took him away from me. And you know that suggests you were right. If he's going to be doing things like this, he may not be mature enough to be my apprentice. At least not yet. Luke and Mara exchanged a quick look. It seemed like a neutral exchange, but Jason could read it as though it were a large text news feed. They were thrown off by his admission that they might have been right all along. He exulted in his power to position their emotions. Mara said,
Has he communicated in the last couple of days?
Jason shook his head. I received a text message from him explaining some ways he planned to make Luke move his feet in sparring. That was the last I heard from him. Of course, he added, if he's run away from home and can find a way to get off planet, he'll probably come here, to me. If that happens, I assume you want me to send him straight back.
That's correct,
Mara said.
And even if he doesn't show up there, if you find out anything about where he might be...
I'll transmit it to you instantly, Jason promised.
Thanks, Jason.
Luke waved to something outside the range of the holocam view, and he and Mara disappeared. Jason smiled. Causing people to think and feel what he wanted them to, even without resorting to the Force, was becoming easier and easier, even with difficult subjects like the almighty Luke Skywalker.
Kuat System, aboard the Errant Venture.
Love Commander followed the Pulsar Skate into the flag hangar, with the two X-Wings bringing up the rear. Waiting at the doors leading out of the hangar was Booster Tarek. The old man certainly wasn't diminished by age, Han decided. Burly and gray-bearded, he floated around on a hover chair as massive as the front end of an airspeeder. But he stood up out of the chair as the skate's boarding ramp came down, and Mirax dashed down it. He might be too old to walk long distances, but he was certainly not going to be caught sitting down for a reunion with his daughter. Lando, Han, and Leia were toward the back of the greeting line. Wedge, Aiella, and Miri also embraced the old man.
Han and Leia shook his hand. Corrin, Booster's son-in-law, was last to approach and did the same, his rueful expression suggesting he still hadn't quite forgiven himself for coming to like Booster. Booster finally sat again and fixed a glare on Corrin.
But you didn't bring my grandchildren.
Corrin folded his arms.
They're scattered to the four corners of the galaxy on Jedi business. Not my fault.
The old man fixed his stare on Mirax.
Your husband still can't do simple math. You can't scatter two children to four corners.
Mirax's grin grew broader. Jedi think that everybody can be divided into fractions. Come on, Father, we really need to talk. They settled into a private conference room only a few paces from the flag hangar. The black gleaming sideboard had been set out with finger foods, alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks, and sealed sabacc decks with holographic images of the errant venture on the backs of the cards. Most people present settled for the food and alcohol-free beverages, but Miri took a sabacc deck and practiced shuffling, stacking the deck and palming cards. Leia watched the sophisticated card sharps techniques for a few moments before turning her attention to the others.
So,
Booster said, and pointed at Han and Leia.
Everybody in the galaxy wants to arrest you two. Except the Haprans. Some of whom want to investigate you, and some of whom just want to kill you. Are you going to get the venture blown up?
What's the matter? Han asked, his voice taunting. No sympathy for someone everybody is chasing?
Booster snorted.
Good answer.
Leia knew that he'd been a smuggler before she had been born, and been sought for his crimes by both Corellian security and the Empire.
All right,
Booster continued.
What is this all about?
I'm sure you know all the public facts about the Corellian GA war,
Wedge said.
I'm equally sure you're running odds.
Booster nodded.
When your retirement ceremony was broadcast, odds went to 37-1 for total conquest of Corellia. Unless the Bothans come in, at which point it goes to 14-1 for a negotiated conclusion, with the Bothans selling the Corellians out and getting the Rancor's share of the deal.
Wedge's face twitched.
Right. Anyway, the public records don't talk about the fact that there are odd, unexplained variables at work here. The pressures that have brought this war into being are unambiguous, easy to identify. But there's additional string pulling going on that's harder to bring into focus.
Such as, Lando said, efforts by different groups that would take Han and Leia out of the equation. Take the assassinations of the Bothan politicians on Coruscant. If they were done by Corellians to bring the Bothans in, why haven't those agents also targeted major figures like Cha Nyathol to deprive the GA of some of its strategic strengths? Or Jason Solo, as revenge for all the Corellian prisoner-taking. Things aren't adding up.
Wedge said,
My instincts tell me that if you bet all the forces lining up to keep the Bothans out of the war failing, you'll make a good return on your bet.
And then there's the whole thing with ghosts appearing and persuading previously rational people to do very bad things,
Leia said.
That strongly suggests a Force user. A dark sider in all likelihood, if the goal is to help war happen.
If there's somebody pulling strings, Han said, that rotter is probably on Corellia or Coruscant. That's where most of the puppets are dancing. And I'm talking about people like Cal Omis and Dur Gedgen being puppets.
We sort of stowed away on the Antilles Horn rendezvous with you, Booster, Leia said. But on the flight out here, she glanced at Han, we came to the conclusion that the errant venture would be an incredible resource for gathering information. Park it in the Corellian system, where there are thousands of restless military personnel, provide gambling and entertainments. People get drunk, talk more freely.
Han added,
And it's not as though there'd be a big financial loss. Thousands of restless military personnel? Like Leia says.
Booster snorted.
You think I'm so old I don't notice financial opportunities anymore? Princess, I applied for access to the Corellian Exclusion Zone the day it was established. The GA has been sitting on my application ever since.
Leia simply nodded.
I'm glad you have no objection. So now all I have to do is get your application approved.
Booster gave her a dubious look.
Because you and Captain Bloodstripes there are so well loved by the government now.
Leia matched him stare for stare.
No, because Jason Solo swings a big lightsaber with the blockade forces. And if Luke Skywalker tells him that letting the Errant Venture set up there is a terrible, terrible idea, Jason will probably accelerate its approval so fast you'd think he'd slapped a hyperspace engine on it.
It hurt to speak dismissively of her own son's powers of critical thought, but it had for some time been obvious that Jason was not entirely logical when it came to his relationship with Luke. Jason resented his uncle and balked at Luke's advice. Painful as it was, Leia now found it useful to exploit the fact.
Huh!
Booster thought about it for a second, and then was distracted by more of Miri's fancy card work.
All right, girl, you can stop it. You're hired.
Miri froze in mid-shuffle and looked at him wide-eyed.
Huh?
You were applying for a job, right?
She shook her head, bewildered.
I was practicing. Mom says it's an area where I'm weak.
Booster turned his glare on Aiella.
Meaning you're better at it than your daughter?
Both women nodded.
All right, then,
Booster said.
Aiella, you're hired, too.
Aiella smiled.
Only if we get the approval for Corellia. But if we do, Miri and I will work for free. Hey!
Miri protested.
Well, for tips.
Done,
Booster said. He turned back to Leia.
And done. Drop the word to your brother. And while we're waiting for the approval you're so confident about, slap some paint or fake fur on those two famous faces of yours and enjoy yourselves aboard Errant Venture.
He smiled almost benignly.
Spend lavishly. Tip your hosts and hostesses.
Coruscant, Jedi Temple, Office of the Alima Rar Task Force.
Curiously, considering the rigid militarism of his background, Jag Fel ran his task force very informally, and there were times when Jaina was quite pleased with the fact. Such as now. The office Luke had assigned them was large enough for several desks, floor-to-ceiling displays, and other gear. There was even room for a speeder berth, had the office been equipped with a hatch to the outside, and Jag had filled it with exercise equipment. Today, both he and Zek were shirtless, doing chin-ups, while Jaina sat at a terminal and watched them surreptitiously. The competition, and it was a competition, though neither man would have ever admitted it, was surprisingly even. Jag paused at the top of a chin-up.
So, time has gone by and we've seen no sign of Alima. We've added our monitoring program to the security systems of the temple, the portions of the Senate building that would permit it, the building where the Skywalkers keep their civilian quarters, and other places where they are occasionally seen. And we haven't seen a single flag drop. Zek, we're doing this all wrong.
We should be doing sit-ups instead?
Jag scowled, then lowered himself and began another 10 repetitions.
Jedi humor. No, that's not what I mean.
He means,
Jaina said,
that Uncle Luke isn't Alima's current target. Otherwise, she'd have been detected. Meaning that Mom's the target.
Ah.
Zek finished his set, then dropped to the floor and reached for a towel.
So we track your mother down.
Jaina shook her head.
If it were that easy, Alima would have done it already.
Jag, grunting his way through one more group of 10, which would put him, Jaina noted, exactly and deliberately 10 ahead of Zek, nodded, finished his set, and dropped to the floor.
We need to get the monitoring software installed in places where your parents might show up. Smugglers' havens, casinos, and trouble spots. Here, around the galaxy, even on Corellia.
He paused to consider that last possibility.
I wonder if Galactic Alliance intelligence could swing that.
A current from the vent on the far wall carried air to Jaina, and she wrinkled her nose.
It won't take intelligence to figure out where that smell comes from. You both need to head to the refresher for a Santa steam. Not to put it too delicately, you stink.
Jag looked at Zek and gestured toward the door.
After you.
No, after you.
I'm smaller, so I stink less. A logical calculation. After you.
Zek frowned, but obviously seeing no way to slide past Jag's stubbornness or superior rank, wrapped the towel around his neck and left.
Jaina sighed to herself. Zek had declared that he was over her, but as he'd recovered, he'd grown increasingly reluctant to leave her alone in Jag's company. He didn't need to bother. Jag clearly tolerated her only because it was his job. He had as much told her so the day Luke had assigned her to him. And yet, since the discomfort of their first couple of meetings, he had grown less icy, his words less punitive. She wondered if he had begun to forgive her for her role in costing him, well, everything. About the only things he still possessed were his body and his skills. Not that she hadn't always admired both. She stomped on that intrusive thought, as though it were a bug in the kitchen. Things were finished with Zek, except for friendship, partnership. Things were finished with Jag, except for professional cooperation and, she hoped, a respect that would someday overcome the resentment he felt. She was done with men. She was lucky in war, unlucky in love, and she was the sword of the Jedi. It might take her a lifetime to learn what that meant, what her destiny was, and she couldn't afford to lose her focus just because she was tempted to jump into another doomed love affair.
Commonor, President's residence.
The holotransmission was in the image of a woman, a beautiful woman, her features aristocratic and refined in the inbred Hapen fashion, almost to the point of anonymity. She's a generic Hapen, Fior Rodan told himself, and the startling thought made him more suspicious of her.
Your war and intelligence ministers argue and delay, the woman was saying.
She shook her head in sad sympathy, sending her golden curls swaying.
Knowing that your fleet will be wiped out by the Galactic Alliance forces if they make a misstep. And that would be catastrophic. But delaying will also be disastrous. Corellia will fall soon, and then attacking would be suicide. Soon the GA will turn its attention to Commonor, to what it perceives as Corellia's treason, and you will fall too.
Rodan snorted. You're clearly proficient at cutting through the layers of disinformation we surround ourselves with to keep people like you from taking up too much of our time. But that doesn't make you correct in your assumptions. Yes, the government of Commonor has spoken out against Alliance aggression and for Corellian independence. That's not an act of war, as readying a fleet would be. The unnamed woman gave him a slightly superior smile.
For a man, you've done a superb job of instituting on Commonor the kind of government you advocated for the New Republic. There are no loose turbocannons like the Jedi Order rolling around on your decks. But the same caution that convinced you to keep the Jedi at bay could doom you now. Though I don't think it will. You're clever.
For a man, he added mockingly.
For a man.
Her reply was straight-faced.
I'm going to do you two favors. I'm now transmitting a package of data I have obtained from my sources within the Galactic Alliance Guard. Favio?
The next voice belonged to someone not in holocam view.
Transmitting, mistress.
The woman continued.
These are the plans by which the GA will conquer Commonor, exactly 1 month after the fall of Corellia.
I see, Rodan said, keeping his voice neutral.
Your people will analyze them and confirm their authenticity, establishing my authenticity. Then, in a few days, I will transmit you the time and movements of other fleets that will be moving on Corellia. Fleets that, by themselves, perhaps cannot prevail. Fleets that, with the aid of Commonor, must prevail.
Thank you for your transmission, my lady, Rodan said. She smiled. Her image winked out. Rodan checked his comm display to make sure the transmission had been cut and that the data package was intact and in his computer. Then he sat for long moments, still on the outside, vibrating on the inside. Much of what the woman had said was true, especially the part about his ministers dithering. If the woman also spoke truly about the conquest plans, Rodan had to act. His ministers had to act.
VL-8, he said.
Instantly, his secretary droid was beside him.
Yes, sir?
Transmit that data file to the Ministers of War and Intelligence, plus to everyone on our top military analysis list. Encrypt it to top levels and attach a note saying that it must be evaluated. Then set up a meeting for me and all those parties for midday tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
Star System MZX-32905 near Bamil.
Lumaya waited until her medical droid was set up beside her reclining chair. She was healing well. She should be fit to return to physical activities within a few days. She was still weak, though, and wanted care to be instantly available if the task caused her to collapse. She closed her eyes and let the dark side power that suffused the asteroid roll over her, through her. Then she began looking, through the Force, for a distant target, a mind she had touched many times and reshaped during those contacts, a mind she had made so familiar and distinct she could find it even halfway across the galaxy. It helped that she knew on what world the mind was to be found, but even so, it was long, wearying minutes before she found it. To her inner eye, it was a distinctive yellow glow, surrounded by tiny gleaming sparks of red. Fewer sparks than before. The efforts of the enemy to diminish her influence had apparently been successful in part, but only in part. Lumaya smiled. The enemy's techniques were nowhere near as effective as hers. She approached the mind until it filled her vision, and she planted herself there, making its location an anchor point for her consciousness. Now, for the second phase of this elaborate Sith technique. She drew back from her target mind, seeking other mentalities in the area. And there they were, glows of various hues, none of them sadly decorated with the red sparks of her influence. She sampled each in turn. Most were awake, firm, more resolute than she could affect at this distance. Others were too fragmented. When she touched them, they tended to drift apart into smaller, incoherent glows, and she knew that these were minds of the inmates, the patients. Then she found one that was firm, grounded, but not so resistant to her touch. Its owner was asleep. Lumaya sampled it further, found it to be the mind of a Quarren female. Like a spectral parasite, she affixed herself to that mind, forging a connection, drawing energy out of it and the body that sustained it. Finally, she flowed into the distant Quarren's mind, flowed out through its memory of its surroundings, and she could see. She hovered above the Quarren. The amphibious female was dressed in medical scrubs and leaned across a desk, sleeping there. This was a small office, packed with and lit solely by computer displays. A window looked out over a facing wall of building fronts, and there were, for once, no traffic streams to be seen. A door, ajar, led into a brightly lit corridor. Lumaya got to work. Into the woman's sleeping mind, she whispered, "Open your eyes. Stand up. We have work to do, records to read, instructions to issue." And the Quarren rose, her eyes glazed, her face tentacles twitching. Minutes later, Lumaya restored the Quarren to her desk and true sleep, then drifted from the chamber to find someone. A very useful someone.
Galactic City, Coruscant. Veterans Mental Care Hospital.
Matrik Klauskin, former commander of the 2nd Fleet's Corellian Task Force, but for the last several weeks a patient in this too sympathetic prison, awoke. The small room he'd been given was, as always, dark and quiet, its few items of furniture reflecting white gleams from the city lights filtering in through the transparisteel viewport. Everything was as it should be. Or perhaps not. The door was open. He sat up, his sheet falling from his chest, and realized that someone was standing beside his bed. He looked up. It was Adela. Of course it was Adela. His treatment here was all about his wife. Now she smiled down at him, patient and loving as always. Tonight she wore a shimmering synth silk gown of burgundy. She had lost weight, diminishing from the pretty but distinctly overweight woman she had been the last time he'd seen her, to a figure he could describe as pleasingly plump. The gray was gone from her hair, too, and he realized belatedly that she wasn't just slimmer, she was younger. She looked as she had a mere 5 or 10 years into their marriage.
"Hello, dear," he said. "You realize you're dead?"
Her smile broadened.
Of course I'm dead. I've been dead for years. But it doesn't mean I don't exist.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? The doctors all say that you don't, that your very existence rests only in my mind. But they say I'm getting better.
I don't exist just in your mind. I exist in fact. Phantoms of the mind can't open a door and free you, can they?
Kloskin looked again at the door. It remained resolutely open.
That just means I'm dreaming again. It's really not open.
It is, as you'll find out in a moment.
Her voice became urgent.
Darling, you've been lied to. We've all been lied to. The Corellians have been in the right all along, and we've betrayed our own people by opposing them.
Kloskin frowned. He knew his thinking was muddled, but he couldn't see how he was harming his homeworld of Kamenor by opposing Corellia. True, Kamenor's government had offered words of encouragement to Corellia, but that was just politics at work. Adela continued.
Kamenor and Bathui are coming into the war on Corellia's side. And you, darling, have been imprisoned here and convinced that you're ill, just so the Alliance can keep you from helping our world.
Kloskin sighed. Truth was such a slippery concept these days that he found it hard to trust even his dead wife.
You're either here or not.
There was a little curiosity in Adela's voice.
True.
And I'm either a prisoner or a patient.
True.
And Kamenor and Bathui are either in war or not.
True.
I have to know the truth. And the truth is in what can be verified. I'm sorry, darling. I'm going to go through that open door and then wake myself up. If I don't wake up, then what you say is true.
Don't apologize, Matrick. I know these are difficult times for you.
Kloskin rose. His bare feet were cold on the tile floor. He walked out through the door, looking up and down the corridor at the other doorways. They were all closed. Adela followed and joined him. Kloskin raised his hand to his lips and bit the webbing between his thumb and forefinger. It hurt. He kept the pressure on, biting deeper, and tasted blood. He held the bite until he couldn't stand the pain anymore, and finally, he let his arm swing to his side again. Weary, he said.
I'm convinced.
Good, because you have a lot to do. I'm going to lead you out of this prison. Outside, a friend will give you clothes, transportation, and documents.
Her expression turned to one of sympathy.
You've been a hero of the Alliance for so long, but they turned against you. And it's time to be a hero of Kamenor again.
Drua, moon of Almania. Drua Spaceport.
Customs inspections, Ben decided, are very inconvenient. The transport ride to the Outer Rim system of Almania had been long and dull. Ben spent most of it reading Jedi texts on his datapad, texts about his grandfather, Anakin Skywalker. He'd been given as a preparation for the document he was supposed to write. Or sleeping. He interacted very little with his fellow passengers, preferring not to become memorable to them. Finally, the transport had landed on the heavily industrialized moon of Drua, with its high-security spaceport and its carefully regimented customs facility. Ben stood in the inspection line, his small pack and his belt pouch in hand, and prepared to enter the 20-meter-long sensor tube. There he would be scanned a dozen different ways, and at the end his belongings would be laid out on a table and hand-inspected, with anything the sensors had flagged receiving special attention. There was no way his lightsaber would remain undetected if he carried it through the tube. The tube allowed access through a security wall that was 7 or 8 meters tall, and there was a 3-meter gap between the top of the wall and the drafty-looking shell of the ceiling. There were lots of glow rod pods up there on either side of the wall. Ben could bound to the top of the metal awning above the tube entrance and might be able, with a prodigious leap, to make the top of the wall. He could then run along the top of the tube, clear the wall on the far side, and run out into the non-secure portion of the customs building to vanish into the night, assuming it was night out there, and the holocams all over the facility would record his face, and his image would be on every guard's datapad in an hour. That would be inconvenient.
Then he thought about the Jedi Temple practice droid and its foam steel balls, and he knew what to do. He looked up and found a glow rod pod well behind him. He reached out through the force to grab it, yank it. It rocked a bit. Ben frowned. It was firmly rooted. He focused harder, putting all his intensity into his concentration. The pod snapped free of its mooring and crashed to the permacrete floor, its cluster of dozens of glow rods shattering and sending glass pieces skidding along the floor in every direction. As everyone looked and one armed guard trotted over to see what had happened, Ben used the force to send his lightsaber up to the ceiling. There, above the glow rods, it was barely visible. He caused it to slide across the ceiling until it came to rest above a pod on the far side of the wall, and then, with meticulous care, he lowered it until it nestled into the cluster of rods.
"You're holding up the line, stupid!"
The speaker was an elderly woman, as lean as though she were made of just bone and rawhide, a disapproving look on her face.
"Sorry,"
Ben said. He trotted forward into the tube.
"Sorry doesn't mean anything. If you were sorry, you wouldn't have done it in the first place."
"Sorry?"
"Now you're being insolent."
"Sorry." Ben thought about using his powers to cause her to trip. A face full of permacrete might scrub the disapproval off her face. No, she was old, and she might really be hurt. On the other hand, it would teach her a lesson, and she could stand to be taught a lesson. At the far end of the tube, he handed over his bag and pouch to the gray-uniformed inspection officer and waited, frowning over the question of the old woman. What would Jason do in this situation? Ben shook his head. The question didn't apply. No one would have spoken to Colonel Jason Solo that way, even before he was famous. Why not? Because he was tall and handsome? No, Luke wasn't tall, and was only as handsome as his scarred face let him be. And yet everyone treated him with respect. Luke and Jason commanded respect because everyone knew it was a bad idea to mess with them, from either their appearance or their history. Which meant that Ben was out of luck, because he had neither fame nor formidable looks. The old woman fussed her way up behind Ben.
"You're a very nasty little boy," she said.
Ben glared at her.
"I take it back."
"You take what back?"
"My apology. I apologize, but you didn't accept it. You just used it as an excuse to keep being rude. You have the manners of a bantha with digestion problems. If you had children, I hope they were raised by piranha beetles so they'd be nicer than you."
The woman loomed up over him, her face distorting with anger, and Ben saw in her mind her intent to slap some of what she considered courtesy into him. But he intensified his glare and added to it a little push with the force. "Try it," he all but said. "See what I become." A bit of grayness crept into her complexion, and she took an involuntary step back. Ben's inspections officer handed his bag back to him. He also offered a silent smile and a thumbs up. Surprised, Ben offered a shy smile in return. He turned and trotted toward the door out of the customs facility. There, he told himself, that's how Jason would have done it if he were my age. As he reached the door, he let his lightsaber drop into his hands, then moved out into the night air. The front door slammed open, and two Corsec agents in battle armor carrying blaster rifles were the first ones through it. Han's blaster cleared its holster, and Lando tripped the table over toward the intruders, providing cover. Han shot the first intruder in the chest armor. The blast didn't penetrate, but the impact knocked the man backward into a new wave of Corsec enforcers trying to get through the door. Tepler dived behind the table, switching his tumbler to his left hand, drawing his own holdout blaster with his right. He fired over the table edge. His shot hit the glowing street sign over the door, incinerating it, raining sparks down on the intruders jammed there. Leia ignited her lightsaber. She spun to crouch behind the table, then plunged the glowing blade into the floor. She began to drag it around in a wide circle. Lando extracted his blaster from beneath the folds of his hip cloak. He brought it up parallel with Han's and fired. Leia finished her sweep with the lightsaber, and a rough circle of flooring a meter and a half in diameter dropped away into darkness, rattling against a hard surface a moment later. "Let's go," she said, making it sound like a suggestion, and dropped through. Her lightsaber lit her new surroundings. She was in a darkened, narrow corridor.
Lando looked at Han.
You first.
He took another shot at the doorway, catching a Corsac trooper in the second rank right on the kneecap. Han gestured for Lando to go.
Age before beauty.
Idiots. Tepler dropped through, landing awkwardly behind Leia. Lando slid through the hole. He kept his cane from colliding with anything, but his hip cloak caught on the edge of the hole and was yanked free off his shoulders. He landed gracefully and glared up at his traitorous garment. Then he trotted after Leia. Han grabbed one table leg and fell through the hole, hauling the leg with him. All four table legs dropped into the hole, leaving the tabletop flush against the floor. The awkwardness of his descent caused him to hit the corridor floor hard and go to his knees. But he rose unhurt and sprinted after the others, guided by the glow-rod-like qualities of Leia's lightsaber. Han rounded a corner and caught up with the others. Leia stood at the top of a short permacrete ramp. A metal door barred her way. She slashed at the top hinge of three, cutting through it. Tepler stood behind her, calm, blaster at the ready. Lando, like a catalog hollow of elegant indifference, leaned against the wall, twirling his cane. There were more blaster shots from back the way they'd come. Han heard pieces of wood raining down into the corridor. Leia finished the second hinge and got to work on the third. Tepler stepped forward and raised his arm to catch the top of the door when it toppled. The door fell. Tepler wrenched it out of the way, and it clattered to the permacrete floor. On the other side, the ramp continued up. Several meters beyond it, Han could see speeders roaring past what had to be the end of the alley behind the cantina. He, Leia, and Tepler ran toward the escape the street represented. Lando remained behind, to delay pursuit, Han assumed. Leia extinguished her lightsaber as they reached the alley mouth. A narrow sidewalk gave them an avenue for escape. The cross traffic just a few centimeters away roared past, the speeders running lights leaving colorful horizontal streaks in the air. Han looked at the situation. This was going to turn into either a running blaster battle or a blaster battle performed on stolen speeders.
Ready to go, sweetheart?